we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
You know, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices Radio, Canada's only radio show and podcast on compassionate living and animal advocacy. This is 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada on Friday, May the 10th, 2019. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen, and I'm joined in studio by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Happy Friday.
Our show today features two interviews with guests who made massive transformations in their lives to benefit animals, their health, and the environment. First, a former dairy farmer turned vegan activist from New Zealand and founder of Campervan Kitchen, who you can follow on Facebook. And then we will interview a local mother raising a vegan toddler. 32-year-old Jamie Bistrick was at the Vancouver Aquarium with her then one-year-old years ago, and one of her friends happened to be protesting there that day, a close friend of Allison and I as well. What he said to her that day eventually caused her to go vegan, so stay tuned for those interviews in a few minutes. And Mother's Day is this weekend, and as I do every year, I want to bring your attention to the exploitation of the female reproductive systems of animals in our food industry. Mother cows are repeatedly kept pregnant so that they produce milk for us. They have their babies taken away shortly after birth. The males are sold for veal, and the females are kept as future milk slaves like their mothers. Chickens in the egg-laying industry are genetically manipulated to produce hundreds of eggs per year, which is totally unnatural for chickens, who in the wild would only produce two clutches of eggs per year. This labor-intensive egg-laying leaches calcium from their bones to make all those eggshells, and it causes painful, often deadly, uterine prolapses. At the hatcheries where egg layers are born, male chicks are ground up fully conscious or suffocated in garbage bags simply because they will never produce eggs and are therefore useless to the industry. The females have their beaks seared off by hot blades, making eating and drinking for the rest of their lives difficult. A large percent of them are shoved into battery cages, and that is how they will live their lives until they can no longer be exploited for their reproductive systems. And of course, for those of you who are following our show or any of the undercover investigations of Excelsior Pig Farm in Abbotsford on the news, you know how mother pigs spend their lives in gestation crates and farrowing crates, unable to take a step in any direction or turn around. We here at the Animal Voices show ask that you make a Mother's Day commitment to include animals in your feminism and go vegan if you haven't already. Our shows, which you can find at animalvoices.org, are mostly themed around inspiring a compassionate lifestyle, and we're happy to provide you with all the resources you need to make this compassionate transition.
Yes, I know that for pretty much every Mother's Day in the past 9 years that I've been on the show, either I or one of us other producers have always used this opportunity to really focus on these issues that babies and parents for Mother's Day, it all goes hand in hand because humans experience the same things that animals do. And I always try to talk to mothers on my social media, mostly when there's videos being posted of showing, for example, a baby calf being separated from her mother, because I feel that human mothers can relate to that. And in our upcoming interview, I'm so inspired to hear about it's Jamie, right? How mm-hmm. she as a mother really identified with what's going on with animals, and then what's going on, and then how that relates to her as a mother. And she says, like, I would never want my baby torn away from me. And I think about all the things that happen between a mother and a child in this disgusting industry, because it all starts with forcible pregnancy, right?
Yeah.
Like every single animal that is bred in the industry, they're not naturally bred. They're forcibly impregnated.
Yeah, and if you don't know what that looks like, look it up on YouTube. It is horrific. It's violent. It is inhumane. It's oppressive.
And every single part of it from there on, as we saw at the pig farm, a couple of weeks ago, it's hell. It is not a nice place to be. It is not like they're all the baby mothers or all the expecting mothers are living in a nice sort of hospital environment where they're about to give birth to their babies. It's mm-hmm. not like that at all. And it's very, it's just really cold and it's all for profit. And it's not, when you hear farmers saying that we love our animals and that we're trying, that we, and we love our cows, we hear that a lot from mm-hmm. cattle farmers. And we'll hear that today as well, except it's an unusual story where the person who actually loved her cows, because I've seen a lot of farmers like this argue online, but we love our cows, we treat them so well, but there's a big, big, great disconnect there mm-hmm. about what they're actually doing to their cows. And I think it's going to be really inspiring to hear the story. There seems to be so many dairy farmers these days who are giving up their cows, or farmers in general who are making the connection, and because they're the ones who are firsthand involved, and they're saying no more. Veganism is now my new life story.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that. I just love any kind of a story of somebody who's made a massive personal transformation yeah. in the way that they view things. And on our show, we've interviewed Michael Lanigan from Uxbridge, Ontario, who actually had a farm, and he was honestly the kind of guy that would cry when he was loading up those cows to be taken to the slaughterhouse. Mm-hmm. He just didn't know any other way. And then he ended up hiring a vegan on his farm. And it's ironic to me that a vegan would want to work for him, but she kept coming by with her resume, and he was quite in awe of how badly she wanted to work on his farm. It was almost like it was fate. She knew he was kind enough that she could transform him. And I don't know if that was her plan from the get-go, but she definitely got that vegan message into his ear. And when he was rearing a calf that was, I think, born prematurely and required a little bit of extra love from him, he bonded so much with this calf that he said, I can't send you off to slaughter in 2 years' time. And that was it. And Edith, who was working on his farm, has helped him transition that farm into a sanctuary. He's been made fun of by the local farmers in the area. He's been unfriended by them, and he's doing the right thing. And by the way, every summer he has a massive vegan barn party, and I would love for us all to do a road trip out there, or maybe I should say a flight out there.
Ontario,
yeah. Yes. I think that would be so much fun. So, you know, you never know who's going to make a transformation is the point that I'm trying to make today. So keep planting those seeds, everybody, all you vegan activists out there. Keep talking about what animals are going through. You just never know. Somebody might get very defensive and make you wrong and say that you're attacking them when you're not. We have to have a very thick skin dealing with this kind of pushback. But I can tell you myself, I regularly hear from people who've told me I've inspired them to go vegan, and they were the last people on earth I expected to listen to what I was saying, because the way they were responding to me was as though they wanted me to just shut up and I was annoying. And I thought, I've probably lost a friend there. But guess what? They're thanking me now for changing their life.
Yeah, and we're going to be hearing a story sort of like that coming up soon. I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, I've got goosebumps.
Yeah, so the Veg Expo was last weekend. You and I and Sinead both attended, representing Animal Voices. What did you think of Veg Expo?
Well,
lots to see, right?
The highlight was the men on the stage, speaking of lots to see. Oh my, good-looking muscle guys, vegans up there, pretty famous
vegans.
If
you want to know what we're talking about, I recorded it all on our Facebook Live. You can check out our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. There is Tori Washington, who's a bodybuilder that's been vegetarian, raised in a vegetarian family, vegan for many years. There was our friend, Dominic Thompson, who we reunited with. Johnny Juicer, who's the sweetest guy. My sister is a huge fan of his, so I went up to him and met him. And he's really, really nice guy. He's a raw foods expert and juicing expert. And then there was John Lewis, who's also known as Badass. I was going to say,
we can say ass on air.
Yeah.
Badass vegan.
Badass vegan. No,
yes.
I was going to say what I had said to you before, big ass, because he's really big. He's 6'6". So there's a picture of us with him on Facebook if you want to see him towering over us two short people. Yeah. And we have plans to maybe have some of them on our show in the future. And, John Lewis, he's making a new film with Keegan Coon, who made What the Health, and that's coming out in November.
So
he
excited.
Said he'll be on our show for that.
Yeah, that was really great. And then just quickly, I want to say last night I attended a vegan film festival, which was awesome. It was down at the York Theater on Commercial Drive, really cool little theater. And I just want to thank all the organizers of that event. It was mostly vegans, I think, in the audience, so I would prefer to see more people that haven't already converted to that lifestyle in attendance at these events, because it was so powerful. And I was just sitting there thinking, if I was a meat eater and if I hated vegans, I would have been in tears watching those films. There was one called 73 Cows about a farmer from England. You can find this on YouTube, 73 Cows. A farmer from England who really just hated sending his cows to slaughter and eventually transitioned and stopped doing so. Again, another
There's
story
another
like
farmer,
that, right?
Yeah.
The transformation stories. I just love them.
In honor of our Mother's Day show, we have a vegan mother to a 3.5-year-old little girl on the show today. We are speaking with 32-year-old Jamie Bistrick from Vancouver. Welcome, Jamie. Thanks for being on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, I just love your story. And as I was reading your, you know, your journey into veganism, I found myself crying so hard I could no longer read the words on my computer screen that you had sent me. And you and I actually didn't realize this until today, because I just recently met you, but we have a friend in common, and he's a very influential animal rights activist here in Vancouver, David Isbister, and he's part of your story. So that was interesting for me to hear. Why don't you tell our listeners your journey into veganism?
I'd love to. Thank you. I remember the first time I went vegetarian, and it was in grade 8. I learned that a classmate was vegetarian, and I knew I loved animals, and I wanted to stop eating them, so I gave it a try, but it didn't last long, and I gave up because it was too difficult. I was a bacon advocate, I loved cheese and steak, and I told everyone I could never quit them. And that basically describes the dozen of times or so that I've tried being vegan or vegetarian in my life, in my lifetime since high school. And the missing ingredient for me was all the reasons why not to eat animals. And once those clicked, then switching my small family of two to being 100% vegan was just too easy. Just over 2 years ago, I was carrying my one-year-old at the time into the aquarium, as we had a membership, and it was one of our favorite go-to activities on gloomy days. And there was a lineup of activists standing across the street protesting. And I just tried ignoring them and walking straight through the door. And from behind me, I heard, "Jamie, you can do better," on the megaphone, really loud. And I turned and looked and recognized an old friend, David. And I rolled my eyes and just walked inside the aquarium. And I remember feeling livid. I was so mad that he called me out by name and in front of my daughter. I remember stopping to think about why I was mad, and I decided that it was because he called me out in front of my daughter and that it wasn't appropriate. And I didn't stop talking about what had happened for a week or maybe more, but what actually made me angry took me a full year to come to terms with, and I was angry that he called out my accountability. So over that next year, I met and spoke to a handful of other vegans and slowly felt that push towards giving up practices that didn't align with my morals. And there were two more encounters in particular that stood out to me the most. The first one is that I met a 9-year-old dog, and she had been vegan her entire life. And she was the healthiest, softest, happiest dog I think I've ever met. I don't think I've ever touched a dog whose fur was that just soft and clean and perfect. And her owner explained that they used the guidance of a vet and would have happily fed her differently if she had shown any signs of malnourishment, but she didn't, and she was absolutely thriving. And that moment really stuck with me. From then on, I kept thinking, if a dog can do that, then why can't I do that? And then the next moment was something that made me angry yet again. A friend was posting stories on Instagram, and she kept sharing posts and videos of how animals were being mistreated in the farming and dairy industries. And this particular friend is not only an incredible mother, but she's also always just enveloped in this amazing, loving energy that you can't help but admire. And I kept feeling angry, but the fact that I looked up to her made me feel so conflicted about that. And that ended up being the final push for me to start seeing things totally different. Before that, I was constantly angry at veganism, and it was because it represented something I knew was right, but I refused to completely acknowledge that. And ripping off those layers of societal conditioning is one thing, but to admit that I was wrong for so many years of my life and that I supported the industry that's torturing and murdering animals, that was almost impossible to swallow. It was like the root of every time I got mad at someone for pushing veganism on me. And I still feel so much guilt right now and disgust for being that way for so many years and not seeing it differently. So through that whole year, since David yelled at me, I kept hearing that echo in the back of my mind, "You can do better, Jamie." And eventually the tone changed in my mind and it started to sound more like an encouragement. And I kept thinking, I can do better. Yeah, I can do better. And about a year ago, all of those influences came together and my whole perspective changes. My whole perspective changed completely. Not only did I realize that I had no reasons not to be vegan, but there were a thousand reasons as to why I should be. And the perspective I had about my daughter, who am I to choose a vegan life for her, quickly turned into how dare I choose to put dead bodies in her body or animal products, and how dare I make that choice for her. So once I got there and made that decision, I just explained to her why I was choosing to be vegan. And I didn't even have to make the decision for her. Her instant reply was that she didn't want to eat animals. She didn't want to drink their milk ever. And she never questioned it again. So it was such a relief not to have to make that decision for her. It was so hard to come to it. But I was also so in awe because this brand new little being was able to do something that took me over 30 years to have the strength to get to. And it was a huge challenge to tell my extended family and hear backlash. I remember when my dad gave my daughter a cheese string and told her that it was vegan. So that was fun. It was not. And today I still hear sometimes that close family members are discussing whether my daughter is malnourished behind my back, which she isn't. She's healthier than she was before we were vegan. Or they offer her something that they know she can't have and isn't vegan, and they tell her to come ask mom so that I'm the one that's letting her down. So none of that's easy, but I like to joke, though, that my 3.5-year-old is a more passionate vegan than I am. And I say it because when someone offers her candy or treats that any kid would just want to eat right away, she stops and asks if it's vegan and happily passes it back and says no thank you. She doesn't even mind if she misses out at a birthday party and doesn't get to have cake because she knows what she's standing up for by opting out of those animal products, and that's enough for her. I've always been completely translucent with my daughter with everything, but now, especially with why we're vegan, she knows what happens with all animals that are farmed. She's seen the footage and images of it, which some people could think is a lot for a 3-year-old, but sometimes she really can just take it, and sometimes she needs to step away and play, and that's okay. I think the benefit of the imagination and attention span of a 3-year-old is that you can just walk back to those toys and put yourself back into that magical world a lot more easily when you need to. But regardless, I always ensure that when she's taking in difficult content, I'm there at her side. We both share our feelings, and we discuss all the feelings and all the things we can do to help without being unkind or breaking the law. And the way I see it is there are so many awful things happening in the world that it's so much better to be there to show your child how to process these things than let them find them on their own later. So I just stand by her as she goes through it all. And motherhood definitely has helped connect me to want to stand up for all mothers, just as the idea of losing me helped my daughter connect to wanting those babies to stay with their mamas too. And taking milk from a mother that was meant for her baby just baffles my daughter. She doesn't understand. And the idea of newborns being sent to slaughter just breaks both our hearts. So as much as I regret feeding her animal products at the beginning of her life and not realizing for myself how unnecessary and cruel the animal industry is sooner than I did, I am beyond grateful for everything that got me to where I am today now for us.
Oh, you're making me tear up. Your words are so beautiful. And what would you say to David if he was here right now in regards to how you felt initially that day?
Oh, I don't know. Thanks for yelling at me. Sorry that it took me that long.
Yeah. You know, I've known David for years, and we've done activism side by side together. And something I'll say about him is
He calls people in. He doesn't call people out. It's loving. And anyone who receives that in a defensive way, that's about them, as you explained. That's about their own defensiveness, nothing to do with the person saying you can do better, because the words he chose were really encouraging. And he truly believed you can do better, and that was loving of him, I think. And, you know, when we're at the aquarium and we're pleading with people to get out of that lineup and to give up those annual passes, we get a lot of backlash. And so I want to ask you, do you have friends who go to the aquarium, and do you tell them this story?
I don't actually know anyone that still goes to the aquarium.
Oh, that's good news.
I don't.
Wow.
But I definitely agree with you that, like, when I heard him initially say that to me, I felt defensive. But after a little bit of time, it totally changed. I realized that it was definitely an encouraging thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a similar story. I use online dating profiles to get guys to watch the Earthlings documentary. And I had a conversation with one fellow where he told me he was an animal lover. And I said, well, you eat meat. How can you be an animal lover? You're speciesist. And apparently he had called me an effing bee and that I was self-righteous. And I didn't remember this because I get a lot of this online. So it's just, you know, one of hundreds, right? And so I ignored it and moved on. And then about a year later, I get a Plenty of Fish message from this guy who I don't remember talking to. And he's apologizing for calling me an effing bee and saying that I was self-righteous. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't remember speaking with you. And he said, well, you called me out on my speciesism because I said I loved animals. But what I really meant was I loved pets. I didn't love all animals. I was eating them. And I did watch the Earthlings documentary, and I've now been vegan for a few months. And to this day, he's actually an activist now. And so that's another story where, you know, initially someone is defensive and making you out to be a wrong person for speaking out for animals and for speaking the truth to them. But initially, yeah, you know, that's just their initial defensive reaction from their reptilian brain. And then if they're mature enough individuals emotionally, they will go home and think about that and they will make a change, right?
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
And so has that caused you to perhaps speak out in a similar way that David did to you in your own life now?
The only way that I've really spoken out to people is actually through a dating app. I posted in my bio that I was vegan and looking for the same in a partner, and that apparently is a magnet for men to tell you everything they eat that is not vegan, or just that they only eat dairy and cheese. And yeah, I basically only received messages telling me what animal products people ate. So I responded with lots of information and links to Earthlings and Watch Dominion. And I was pretty polite about it. I wasn't rude. I only shared facts. And I actually ended up being banned for life from Tinder for that.
Me too, girl. I wasn't as polite as you, but yeah. I call it Tindervism. But, you know, as I said to you earlier, there's lots of other dating apps. And if you are actually just using them for that purpose, then I suggest you get back on all the others and just do the same old thing. And if you are truly looking for a partner, I would suggest you come out and do some activism with us, because there's lots of men in our movement and they're single and good looking guys and they spend their spare time speaking out for animals. What bigger turn on? I don't know. I mean, that's just the best thing ever, right?
Yeah. We actually just started getting into activism, and my daughter's loving it, and I am too, and we want to do a lot more.
Fantastic.
It feels really good.
Absolutely. That would be great. And, you know, we do have kids come out and help us, and it's awesome that you're raising your daughter vegan, and she started at such a young age. One day she will thank you for giving her a healthier start in life. And I do hope that you can encourage other mothers to make the same transformation that you did. You're a very inspirational person.
Thank you. I try to encourage everyone to at least take little steps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jamie. I look forward to seeing you at some events, and I'm glad we're connected on Facebook now, so I'll definitely be inviting you to some.
That sounds great. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, we'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So on the phone today, we have local activist David Isbister. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on again. Great to hear all of your voices.
So I just interviewed our mutual acquaintance, Jamie Bistrick, about her journey to going vegan, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to comment on her story of becoming vegan, largely in part because of your words that day at the Vancouver Aquarium. What do you have to say to that?
It's very kind. It's touching. For me that day, I was just a little disappointed, not in her. I saw a number of my friends and acquaintances I've been, you know, really, not to use a cliche word, blessed to be a part of a lot of different communities in music and that overlap with activism. So I've met a lot of people with a lot of different goals and aspirations. And what I know of Jamie is that she's so kind and gentle and has had her own sort of struggle that has really been inspiring for others and has really taken her to some unique places. So when I saw her there, I mean, I really didn't mean to be angry or judgmental. I just sort of just kind of called out in as friendly a manner as I could. You know, I think you can do better, Jamie. And as it turns out, she thought so as well. But I don't look at myself as the arbiter of who is doing what morally or not. But in that moment, I just knew a little bit about what she was about, and I wanted to try and reach out to her. But she was far away, so I had to kind of call it out.
Well, thank goodness for megaphones, right?
Yeah, totally.
Well, I did mention to Jamie that you are the kind of person that calls people in and you're not calling them out. And I think that your words
are
very kind. And so, you know, we activists face so much pushback from the public. It wouldn't be the first time that somebody would turn their heads away when they're in the aquarium lineup and continue to go in. And you can tell they're mad at us. But here's an example of where that actually did plant a seed that grew. And it's so good to hear this feedback because we can feel so disheartened when we face a lot of negativity and pushback from the public. And, you know, we're constantly being criticized for the variety of tactics we employ to get our message across. And I find it completely exhausting to have to constantly find creative ways of making people care about animals. So,
totally.
Yeah, good on Jamie. It really made my day. I actually was crying when
and
I read her
letter. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say she's actually part of a big club that we've all seen. You know, when we started going to the aquarium more, lots of people were willing to turn away. Lots of people were willing to hear us, sometimes right then and there, and other times, you know, at their own pace, doing their own research, which, you know, either way, I recommend it. Obviously, you've got to back it up with your own knowledge and make sure it harmonizes with your own beliefs. But, you know, she's a part of a lot of people who finally decided to try and hold the aquarium accountable or even just themselves personally accountable. So it's not too uncommon anymore, but I remember it used to happen and it would be like the heavens had shone down upon us. We couldn't believe it that someone actually finally listened. So
yeah,
I think it's great.
Well, I mean, tomorrow is going to be Empty the Tanks at the aquarium, and you're going to be there, and I've actually asked Jamie to be there, and she says she will. And I said to her, hey, maybe it's your turn to call out into the megaphone. You can do better to the people in the lineup. So unfortunately, I have to work and I'll miss it, but I look forward to having a video sent to me of her on the megaphone. But what do you want people to know about the Vancouver Aquarium, those people who are still supporting it? What do you think you can say to possibly get them to understand another side here?
Yeah, I'm going to try and keep it brief, but what I can say is that the aquarium has been forced by the public, by politicians, by people over the years to stop just one unbelievably and obviously exploitative practice, and that is the keeping of cetaceans. But it's worthy to note that they are still shipping cetaceans to other parks to be imprisoned or enslaved. Parks that are more like a classic water park where animals are there to entertain and not to inspire, though that's arguable anyway. And they continue to participate in CASA purpose breeding, you know, with the walruses and with all the other animals they imprison there that are unrelated to conservation, that are unrelated to education. And they also are continuing to fight the park board's ban. So their actions do not currently match what they have been saying, which is occasionally they've mentioned that they feel like they'll stop keeping cetaceans captive, but they haven't been definitive or resolute in any way. They continue to issue the same sort of apologia for all sorts of practices that are clearly really demonstrably harmful to cetaceans, both in the wild and in their care. So I want people to continue to critically analyze, like they have been, along with the cetaceans. You know, if we're granting these privileges to cetaceans, you know, that they are worthy of life, why are we not granting them to walruses, to sloths, to red-footed tortoises, to dart frogs, to anacondas, all the other animals held there, to endangered fish that are purpose-bred for the aquarium, and even in cases wild-caught. Why are we supporting that, you know, against all the other people who go out and do actual conservation and actual advocacy with demonstrable scientific results without the use of for entertainment and for-profit captivity? And I want everyone to reflect on whether or not the aquarium has come far enough, or if they're just letting the passage of time kind of rub out this huge, horrible legacy that they've created. And I think a look at their actions recently will give a lot of people the answer. But, you know, on a positive note, they've moved away from certain practices, and I think it might be a raw, very good opportunistic time for us to try and get them to be what they actually say they are. So I'm going to keep working on that, and I hope others will too.
And for those wanting more information on the activist perspective, you can check out the documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered online, as well as vanaquafacts.org and the Facebook group Van Aqua Facts as well.
Awesome. Totally. And everyone should check out the Whale Sanctuary so that they can arm themselves with the knowledge around what the aquarium says should happen with rescues or animals who can't go back into the wild, or that same argument we hear a lot but has already been answered and addressed a number of times.
That's right. There is a fundraising going on currently for a whale sanctuary in Canada, and this will be the answer for rescued cetaceans. And thank you so much for being on the show today. Thank you for inspiring Jamie. And for anyone interested in Empty the Tanks, that takes place Saturday from 11 to 1 o'clock at the Vancouver Aquarium. If you don't know much about this situation, just come talk to the activists. They're very friendly. And come and meet them and learn more. This is how I ended up going vegan. I attended a protest at the aquarium. I was a meat eater. And I left there learning about veganism, and it completely changed my life. So come on, check
and
it out.
I'm going to feed everybody sausages and coconut bars.
Oh, you're
vegan sausages and coconut bars.
He's so generous. Thank you.
Come for the food and stay for the activism.
Yes, David is a vegan chef. His business is plant-based food and natural products, 400 Industrial Avenue, and you can find him on Facebook under plant-based food and natural products. Thank you so much, David.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Okay, we'll see you soon.
Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Just want to also mention, if you're interested in going plant-based and trying some of David's food, he has a pop-up weekend this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, from 11 until 4. If you go to his Facebook page, plant-based, all one word, food and natural products, you can find out the details and even the items and prices that you can get there at 400 Industrial Avenue, down by the climbing gym.
And I can certainly vouch as well that they are delicious, as can you.
Absolutely. For people that are looking to go vegan, you can find some products that are like the ones that you're trying to get off of, and a much healthier alternative.
You're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 CFRO. We are a non-commercial station bringing you voices and stories and perspectives you probably won't hear elsewhere. We are supported by members and by donations. You can become a member by going to our website at www.coopradio.org. If you like what you hear but don't want to be a member, that's cool too. You can still help by clicking on the donate arrow at the top right of the website. Co-op Radio thanks you for listening and for helping build our community of listeners and programmers.
You know I need your love. You got that hold on me. As long as I got your love, you know that I'm happy. When I wanted you to share my life, I had no doubt in my mind. And it's been you, woman.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories. We're lucky to have Jackie Skurr on the show today. Welcome, Jackie, all the way from New Zealand on this phone call.
Hello.
So you mentioned it's cold there today. Whereabouts are you in New Zealand?
It is very cold. I actually live on the road permanently, so I'm all over the place. But at the moment, I'm close to the bottom of the country, and I think winter has come early.
So you have a very interesting story about your journey to veganism, and being that I just love stories of extreme transformation, I'm glad to have you on our show today, which is themed around Mother's Day, and we're always trying to encourage people to include animals in our celebration of Mother's Day, given that, as you know, female animals are exploited for their reproductive systems, correct?
Yeah, they sure are.
And so you used to work on a dairy farm, and you're now promoting veganism. Can you tell us how you wound up working on a dairy farm years ago?
Yeah, it was very unexpected. I grew up in England, and when I was growing up, I had a field of cows behind my house. And to me, they looked so peaceful, just, you know, doing their thing, being cows, eating their grass, and I thought that was what farming was. So suddenly, when I was 19, I moved to the other side of the world, and my partner at the time was working on a dairy farm. And so I didn't have a work permit for my first year, so I kind of learned to milk cows for something to do. And I was so proud and excited to begin with. I thought, you know, I'm here, I'm living the dream, this is clean, green New Zealand, I am, you know, working with these beautiful animals, and, you know, I am in the home of animal agriculture, you know, there's no better thing to be doing. And so, yeah, I just learned to milk cows for the first few months, and then by the end of that first year when we moved on to another farm, I'd learned how to do everything pretty much on the farm. So I just kept going, you know, I didn't know anything else back then.
And many people romanticize dairy farming with images of cows in vast green fields doing what they love, eating grass, roaming around. But what many people don't think about is how the cows are constantly producing milk. And I'll tell you myself, I'm embarrassed to admit that I grew up thinking this was just a certain species of animal that simply produced milk for us, never making the connection between motherhood and milk production. I mean, obviously mammals only produce milk after having a baby, but this never occurred to me.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't make the connection, not really, you know, until long after, and I was right there, so I don't feel bad about that.
So how about you explain to our listeners the process of getting cows pregnant on dairy farms and what happens to the babies and everything else that's involved that people who are city folk or people who have not experienced this just don't know?
Okay, well, first of all, I guess I have to say, you know, there is definitely no romance here. You know, there's no boy meets girl in any of that kind of part of it. So what happens is, on the whole, farmers choose the cows breeding. So they, you know, they want to make sure that the calves which are born from their dairy stock are the best stock to produce the most milk or the beef. So to make sure this happens, rather than use a regular bull with four legs and a tail and, you know, let nature take its course, well, what they do is they buy straws of semen, which is harvested from chosen breeding bulls. So we won't go into how that happens, but, you know. and what happens with a herd of cows is they are all made to synchronize so that they all come on heat together, and they're all impregnated together, and then they all give birth together. So, you know, that makes it easier for the farmer and just, you know, all year round. So to make sure that the cow gets pregnant when she comes on heat, which is around every 3 weeks in breeding season, she is impregnated artificially. So to do this, we have what's called a technician, and a technician inserts his arm. We're talking his whole arm here, up to the shoulder, you know, no dainty stuff. So the whole arm of a human gets inserted into the cow's rectum. Not the vagina, the way that you would think, but into the rectum to help find the right place inside the cow where the semen has to go. And then the straw is inserted into the cow's vagina, and the farmer then, you know, waits to see if the pregnancy is taken. So obviously this is not nice, and a lot of cows bleed rectally, so, you know, it's not cool. I never, ever liked watching it, but, you know, it wasn't until after I became vegan that you know, I saw people referring to it as rape, and, you know, that's what it is. That's what it is. Who wants that to happen to them? You know, these cows have no choice in getting pregnant or giving birth, and, you know, that's what us humans do to them year after year. So, and you would think that it would be hard to get somebody to do that job, you know, putting their arm up a cow's behind like that, but there is a lot of money in it. So that's how the cows get pregnant. You know, there's if they are lucky, and I shouldn't say lucky because, you know, there's no luck in it, but, you know, if that pregnancy does not hold, then the cows are put out, and towards the end of the breeding season, you know, there will be some actual proper bulls put out in with the herd, and then, you know, nature is allowed to take its course then. But the cow has no consent other than that in any of this. So.
Mm-hmm. And then can you tell us what happens to the babies? Because the females would obviously be useful to the dairy industry, but the males not so much.
Yeah, that's exactly how it goes. And even in the case of the females, it's only if they're the right breed. So, for example, you know, those straws that the farmer carefully picks, if those cows are calved, rather, are born female, then yeah, you know, they're good enough. They can stay. They can become, you know, dairy cows of themselves. But if, for example, if they are born from the bulls that are the real bulls that are used at the end of the breeding season, then yeah, none of those get kept, or very, very rarely, unless, you know, it happens to be a good beef bull. So what happens to the babies is that, just like all the, you know, the media says, that they do get taken from their mothers shortly after birth. So the calves that the farmer wants to keep, they get put in a shed, and we humans feed them twice a day, in bulk amounts rather than ad lib from their mothers. And, you know, they're kept in barns, so they're warm and dry until they're, you know, old enough and strong enough to go outside. And, but at 4 days old, the calves that the farmer doesn't want to keep, which are a lot, the ratio is a lot, they get picked up by a truck and they get taken to the meatworks. So at 4 days old. And, these are known as bobby calves, and they are quite literally born to die. So I can't even believe I'm saying that, you know, that's what it amounts to. These babies are born to die. They're of no genetic use or financial value, but they have to be born so that their mother can produce milk for 9 or 10 months of the year for us humans until she next gives birth. And so, you know, there are millions of bobby calves that are born and killed every year. It's not cool.
And so what have you witnessed the actual moments where the babies are taken away from their mothers? And if so, what was that like?
Oh, yeah. It's awful. Absolutely awful, you know. How do you describe it even? You know, what happens is that the farmer will usually come in, as a lot of people may have seen on media. You know, they usually have like some kind of motorbike or farm vehicle, and they have a trailer on the back. And the farmer just goes along and picks up the calf, puts it into the trailer. You know, the cow is standing over the calf because, you know, they've bonded. You know, she's washed this calf just like humans. They carry their babies for 9 months. You know, they've got this beautiful baby, and all of a sudden, you know, some big old human comes along, picks up her baby, throws it into a trailer. Obviously, she's distressed out of her mind, so of course she's going to follow. And yeah, she will follow her baby right up until the end, when the babies are taken into one shed with the other calves. And yeah, the calves, the mother cows rather, they're put out to pasture together, and you know, they're bellowing, the babies are crying, they're frightened, they're scared, you know. And yeah, nothing can replace the mother. It was my job to rear the babies from birth until weaning, and it sounds so crazy now, you know, I really love these calves, I really did. I really prided myself on looking after them as well as I could. You know, I cuddled them, they had names, and I thought that I was doing a great job because, you know, I looked after them so well, and, you know, they looked well. But nothing can compare to being with their mother. You know, as I said, we, as humans, we fed these calves twice a day. Anyone that has given birth to a real baby know that you don't just feed your baby twice a day. You feed that baby as much as it wants, whenever it wants to feed. And cows and calves are the same. So, you know, we're defying nature in every way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if you know this, but I do animal rights outreach on a daily basis, but especially usually on a weekly basis with a TV outreach program. You've heard of the Cube of Truth. You and I talked about that before we started interviewing here. And for those listeners who don't know, this is where activists go out onto the streets with giant TVs, and we show people actually what happens in these industries. And we do have videos of farmers chasing after the calves in the field and stealing them from their mothers, and then the mothers following along as he drives away with them. And so when we talk to people about this, a lot of them say to us, well, I buy this brand of milk and it's humane. And so I just want you to reply to that kind of a comment, which I'm sure you've heard as well. I say to them, even on the most humane dairy farm, you are separating mothers and babies, and you are forcing a mother to become repeatedly impregnated so that we can have her milk. And you know, I've never been a dairy farmer, so perhaps it would mean more coming from you. So what do you say to people?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, humane or supposedly humane or organic or not, it sucks to be a dairy cow. To me, there were many times over the years that, you know, even before I became a mother myself, and I thought, you know, this isn't right. This is sad. I'm sad. I'm here crying for these cows, you know, but that's the conditioning, you know. This has been going on for generations and generations, and this is what happens. But, you know, ultimately the outcome is still the same. It doesn't matter what kind of farm. And this is a farm sanctuary where, you know, cows are allowed to live as they should be allowed to. Ultimately, the outcome is the same. You know, the cows are still exploited, as you say. We still take their milk, which is not ours to take. Cow's milk is made for a baby cow, a calf, and for them alone. You know, just as human babies have human milk, you know, we would never dream of drinking monkey milk or dog or cat, but for some reason we've indoctrinated generations of humans to think that it's okay to steal from mother cows and their babies. But, you know, that still goes on these so-called humane farms. So, yeah, you know, you can look at it however you like, but it's still the same. And, you know, all these years that I was rearing these beautiful calves, and, you know, nurturing them as best as I could and following them as they progressed through the herd and became adults and had babies of their own, you know, it still never occurred to me that no matter what, whether you're a beef cow or a dairy cow, the outcome is always the same. You're going to end up on someone's plate or at the slaughterhouse, you know. It took me a very long time to make that connection, you know, and I considered myself to be a kind farmer. So,
right. You know, speaking of how strange it is to drink the milk of another species, you mentioned to me that you've been inspired to eat healthier by watching some very famous documentaries that are quite well known amongst animal rights activists. And for our audience members that don't know about these, do you want to just tell us about the ones that inspired you the most and why?
Sure. I mean, there's obviously been a lot that I've learned in the few years since I've been vegan now. But for me, you know, I was one of these people that I was having health problems and they were unexplained, and I was at the stage where I would do anything to feel better. So that was why I went vegan initially. I was vegetarian on and off for years, from when I was a teenager, and throughout my farming years I was vegetarian, you know, pretty much the whole time. I could not bring myself to eat anything, you know, or anyone, should I say, that I had known or helped to raise. To me, that was absolutely wrong, but I didn't make the connection with dairy, you know. I thought that eating meat was enough. I didn't realize, even as a person that worked in the dairy industry, you know, how dairy was just as bad, just as harmful to animals and everything else as meat was. So initially I went vegan because I wasn't feeling very well, and as it turned out, there was nothing that diet could fix other than just surgery. But, you know, that was the catalyst for me. And so I went vegan before I actually watched these documentaries. But a few days in, I watched What the Health, because I wanted to know more about veganism and how I could do it properly, you know. Because all the vegans that I'd heard of, you know, you just eat leaves and berries and that kind of thing, you know, we don't eat broccoli. So I watched What the Health, and for me that was a huge eye-opener, as with many people. Once I'd seen, you know, the effects of processed meats and what they do, you know, in carcinogens and that kind of thing, I thought, well, geez. For me, it was very easy to go vegan after watching that. I was like, well, cool, you know, I am never eating this stuff again. My husband, he was you know, not the stereotype of the usual vegan man. He's large, hairy, gruff, you know. But he was very supportive of me going vegan, and he said, you know, that's cool, I'll support you, but, you know, I will never do it. I love my meat, I love my cheese, and, you know, he really did. 5 days later, I was listening, well, I was watching Forks Over Knives documentary, and he wasn't even watching it. He was just listening on the other side of the room to me out of one ear, and he couldn't believe what he heard. His grandfather had just been diagnosed with dementia quite badly, and it was a huge wake-up call for him to hear that these and other major diseases could be avoided by not eating meat and dairy. You know, and as with any family, when someone suffers a serious illness, it was a big shake-up. And so, you know, he thought, if there's something I can do to avoid this, I'm not going to eat this stuff either. And so he went vegan there or then, this person that said he would never go vegan. And after that, the more we learned, obviously, about animal agriculture, the effects, you know, the horror with animals and the effects on the environment, for us, it became about everything. So, you know, I think with most people, it starts off with one thing that triggers them, that makes them go vegan, and the rest just kind of follows. You know, once you know, you can't unknow, can you?
That's very true. And you now live a very unique lifestyle promoting veganism. Tell us about that for those who don't know who you are.
Yeah. Well, we've been living on the road in New Zealand for 3 years. And, you know, we go all over the country. And we discovered, you know, we were living in this tiny camper van, and we discovered to our surprise that we loved vegan food. You know, like many people, we thought that it was going to be very restrictive. We were going to be super skinny, super healthy. But we had always been really, we considered ourselves to be foodies. You know, when we were eating meat and dairy, we thought that we were, you know, we ate good food. But we realized upon going vegan that we'd actually been really unadventurous with our food, and we couldn't believe the variety of food that we were now eating. And here we were doing this in our tiny camper van, you know, where people usually eat noodles and beans and that kind of thing. You know, we had this tiny little two-burner stove, and, you know, we had this whole new joy of food and cooking opened up to us, and we were making these amazing variety of foods and feeling great and just really enjoying our food with the bare minimum. So we wanted to share this joy and our love of vegan food with others. So we set up a Facebook page called Camper Van Kitchen. And it was just like, hey, this is us. You know, we love our food. We want to share it because, you know, we're really proud. We're living in a tiny van and we're making really good stuff here. So, and yeah, people started following us, our friends started following us, our non-vegan friends, and we found that inspiring people to go vegan through delicious food was turning out to be a lot easier than making people feel bad. It was kind of a gently approach, you know, but it was a part of our cunning plan, like, well, look, this food is really, really awesome, and if you go vegan, you can eat lots and lots more of this awesome food, and look how much money we're saving, you know, look how clean this food is, you know, we're living in this tiny van, we don't have to put up with, you know, we don't have to worry about meat going off now, we don't have this horrible mess while we're cooking, it's all just, it's so much easier, it's so much cheaper, and it's so much better for you. So that's how we got into it, and we found, you know, all of a sudden people would start messaging us saying, you know, thank you so much, you've inspired us to go vegan, you know, we love your food, we love your recipes, and yeah, it's just really, really grown. And so we actually have our first proper recipe book. We gave away a PDF book in our first year, but this year word has spread enough that I think at the end of 2019 we have our first proper cookbook coming out. So yeah, we've come a long way for a couple of people in a tiny van.
That's fantastic. And so just to close today, if you have a message for people who are human mothers and you want to inspire them to have compassion for animal mothers, what is your message to them today, the non-vegan moms out there celebrating Mother's Day?
The non-vegan moms, you know, I would definitely see cows for who they are. Am I allowed to give a friend of mine a plug here that
of
has
course.
A farm sanctuary in New Zealand?
Yeah.
Okay, if you really want to see cows and calves the way that they should be, the way they should be allowed to live, and really see these beautiful animals for the mothers, for the sentient beings and their babies that they are, please go to a Facebook page called Till the Cows Come Home Farm Sanctuary, and that's Till with one L. T-I-L, Till the Cows Come Home Farm Sanctuary. And this is a friend of mine who is 19 years old. She turned her entire family of beef farmers vegan, and she has this incredible farm sanctuary, and you would not believe her photos, her stories. She is absolutely incredible, and, you know, even my husband just looks at these photos and these stories and says, wow, you know, it really makes you see cows in a completely different light. And then, you know, as mothers and with their babies, it's incredible. So, you know, she can change the world, that girl.
That's great. We'll try to get her on. We'll try to get her on the show. That sounds interesting.
She would love it. She would love it. She is doing amazing things, you know. Can't say enough about her. She's a wonderful human being, you know. We are a large animal agricultural country here in New Zealand, but we have some amazing people that are starting to speak out and do really great things to change people's minds and hopefully change the future. So, yeah, she is one to watch.
And
that's
great. We will post that to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. I will also link it in our web post, animalvoices.org. And for you, if people were inspired by you and they want to follow you on Facebook,
absolutely, yes. Come and visit us at Camper Van Kitchen, and we would love to see you and share our recipes with you, and hopefully you'll find them as delicious as we do.
Camper Van Kitchen. Thank you so much, Jackie. I love what you're doing, and keep it up.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on next week's show on Friday, May the 17th. What do we have coming up next week, Jen?
We have an interview with a local entrepreneur, Serena, on her new vegan businesses. We'll leave that as a surprise for next week. And I'm also hoping to get an interview with one of the friends of the guest today. She's got a friend who used to work in a slaughterhouse and has now gone vegan.
Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. You can also send us a line at info@animalvoices.org. To end the show today, we'll be playing a musical piece by our fellow local activist, David Espister. This is a cover song of the band Fleetwood Mac, and David is performing with his band Season to Attack. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening, and remember to be kind to the animals.
My love, and I took it down. I climbed the mountain, turned around, and I saw my reflection in the snow-covered hills, where a landslide brought me down. Oh, mirror in the sky, what is love? And the child within my heart rise above. Can I sail through the changing ocean tide? Can I handle the seasons of my life? Oh, I don't know. time makes you bolder. Children get older, and I'm getting older too. Yes, I'm getting older too. Time makes you bolder. Children get older, and I'm getting older too. Yeah, I'm getting older too. So take my love, take it down. Oh, climb a mountain, turn around. And if you see my reflection in the snow-covered hills, well, the landslide will bring it down. And if you see my reflection